Welcome to Tech Talk, y'all.
Hi, and welcome to Tech Talk, y'all, episode 315. I'm Adam Walker.
And I'm Sanjay Parekh.
And this episode is brought to you by our company, TogetherLetters.com. If you want to stay connected to the people that are important to you,
why are you doing the .com?
I don't know. I just did. I felt like
I thought it was going to be like .io or .ly or something.
This is brought to you by our company, TogetherLetters. Adam is a ninja. They do have a .ninja extension that no one that is reputable or has any amount of self-esteem would ever use. So there you go. I also have a guru extension. Same thing. Don't ever call yourself a ninja or a guru. That's
by the way, advice. Adam is a dot ninja is available.
Adam is a dot ninja. Okay. That may have to happen later. All right. Listen, man, we have so many articles. Like, holy crap. This thing blew up overnight. Like, I don't even know what's happening. So let's just dive in.
Sanjay is a dot ninja is also available. Man, so
we need to get those.
We might get dueling domain names there.
All right. First up, let's get going. How Mark Cuban forced the biggest U.S. pharmacy to upend its business. And it's a win for Mark Cuban and consumers everywhere. And I freaking love it. So
We've talked about this. Yeah. The thing that Mark Cuban launched a while back, Cost Plus Drugs, it is fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah. And now CVS is doing the same model, the same thing. They forced him into it, which is amazing.
Exactly. It's funny how market pressure causes things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly... Because I really wondered, does Mark Cuban really want to be in the pharmaceutical business? Or really, was he just doing this to make everything better?
He's for sure screwing with the pharmacies, I think.
I think that's fabulous. Yeah. Like, there is so much money sloshing around in healthcare that, man, some competition needs to get in there and squeeze it out for the better of all of us.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Talk about something else that's a better for all of us. Engineers shatter fiber optic speed record at 22.9 petabits. Per second.
All right. Listen, you're going to have to give me some kind of like understanding of like, I can't fathom this. So help me fathom this.
Yeah. So they say in the article that is 20 times more than all global internet traffic collectively right now.
Internet traffic collectively.
You can have 20 times the speed delivering your Spotify tunes to you. 20 times faster than the entire internet.
So what you're saying is like I could literally download the full embodiment of the internet in less than a second is really what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is you could download everything that everybody's doing at that second,
at that
20
moment.
Times.
Okay.
Well, 19 times and still have room left over for something else.
Shatter is not the right word. Like they just like, I don't nuked the record, maybe. Like, I don't know what they did. Like, whatever the word is. So the
same team apparently set a record of 10.66 petabits per second and now has more than doubled
that. That's crazy.
I think it said it's with a new cable and there's some new tech in there.
Right.
They expect this cable to get boosted up to 24.7 petabits per second. So that's a little bit higher than that. By the way, they say at the end of this article, internet traffic is expected to increase by 1,000 times in the future.
Yeah, true.
So this technology has the potential
for the backbone
to
of the internet. Yeah, yeah.
With that growth. So
speaking of the backbone of the internet, but the end users, Google Fiber is offering early access to $250 per month, 20 gig service. Forget that measly 1-2 gig mishmash. It's 20 gigs. That's what I'm talking about. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. So they've already rolled out 5 and 8 gigabits per second packages.
Oh,
and now they're rolling
making
out
look like a
20 gigabit per second packages. Mm-hmm, the other faster stuff was initially available in Kansas City, North Carolina, Arizona, and Iowa.
Yeah.
And I forgot where this fast one is coming.
Not Metro Atlanta. That's where it's coming. It's coming to not Metro Atlanta. That's a Metro Atlanta location near you. That's where it's not.
That's basically the most important part of this is it not here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for most of our listeners, it's probably also not here.
Also not here.
What might be here in the near future is a OLED breakthrough could mean cheaper TVs. So there is a technology breakthrough that's happened with OLED TVs. Now, I'm going to grind my axe here a little bit. I have an axe to grind with OLED TVs. Okay. So I have an OLED TV.
All right.
That's a few years old now at this point.
Yeah.
So it was probably older technology.
Right.
I have ghosting all over that TV.
Really?
And, oh, my God.
I've never had a TV that has ghosting on it. Not once. Never.
You need to come over and revel in the weird ridiculousness of this TV.
Okay.
I can see pictures and oh, when ads have been up and like all kinds of things.
Wow.
The GMA logos on there. Like
that's crazy.
CNN logos on there. All kinds of stuff. It annoys me to no end. By the way, this is the TV that I use when we're gaming sometimes.
Okay.
It's quite irritating. So that has kind of sworn me off of OLED TVs, but I think some of this new technology is going to make it so that ghosting is not as possible with some of this stuff. So
my favorite thing about this article, it was just great. So it was almost as if I had written it. So it's basically written by somebody that clearly doesn't know much about much. And so the article is like, so OLED TVs, they use rare minerals, and that's why they're more expensive, because they use rare minerals, and apparently they're going to use less rare minerals to make them less expensive. That's it. Let's swap out the rare expensive minerals for less rare, less. That's perfect. Let's just do. Why didn't we do that years ago? What's even happening here? Why are we still talking? I don't even understand.
Why did we wait this long to figure this out?
that's like,
don't use the stuff that's hard to get and that's expensive. Yeah. Use the stuff that's easy to find and less expensive.
It's like
we should do that for everything.
That's like the dumbest explanation, but whatever, that's fine. So, all right, moving on. Bose discontinues its Frames line of smart glasses, which obviously we all saw this coming. However, I still think it was a really interesting innovation, and I think it's smart, and I think it probably leads the way into lots of new technologies that are going to come down the road. It's just a little too early, a little too much, a little too cutting edge, and probably a little too expensive. So, not surprised.
We talked about these. I'm trying to search where this was. Episode 30.
Oh.
Bose.
Well, I think we've talked about it more than once. I think we talked about them at least 2 to 3 times. So.
Right.
So
from, yeah, we did.
Yeah, so from episode 30 to now is quite a bit of time.
But that's the earliest time. So they've been working on this for a while, but they just... I don't know what their issue was. It does still seem like a good idea. And I feel like it was more probably marketing. Maybe it was also cost.
I mean, I think it's adoption, right? Like there just aren't enough. I mean, I wear glasses. I love technology. I'm still not going to buy these. I'm a cutting edge adopter. Usually I'm still not going to buy these. Like they're just, it's one step beyond what I'm willing to do at this moment in my technology life. Right. And I think that's their problem.
Yeah. And I think, obviously packing all those electronics into the glasses make them look chunkier. And
exactly.
So you've got to have a special kind of consumer that's going to be willing to buy that.
Exactly.
Next up. Is it me?
It's you.
Yeah, you're up. It's fine. It's me. Tesla again, threatens to sue Cybertruck buyers who try to resell the cars.
So apparently they're threatening to sue Cybertruck buyers for $50,000 if they try to resell their Cybertruck within the first year. And so what they're trying to get rid of,
Think that's a thing.
What they're trying to get rid of is that arbitrage where, you buy a brand new, you get on the list, you buy a brand new car, you flip it and make $20,000 because nobody else can get it. Like that's what they're trying to get rid of. Right. And they can do it. And they know it happens because of the subscription that's attached to the truck to make it function and get updates and all that. So they know it happens. But I mean, you bought the truck. Like it's your truck. Like, how can they sue you for selling your truck? There's another interesting article that I didn't tag, but I read about how Cybertruck's going to have trouble selling over in Europe because there are laws about cars having to have soft bumpers, like collapsible, like bumpers, so that if they hit pedestrians, they're not like instantly, killed. And the Cybertruck being all stainless steel bumpers, like there's nothing soft about that in any capacity whatsoever. And so they were speculating that they might not be able to sell it there, because it doesn't meet with the safety requirements in some of those European countries. So that's also an interesting factoid there. So there you go.
Yeah. I'm going to link to this principle of the first sale doctrine, which might apply to this. I, I, I am not a lawyer.
Right.
So it'll be in the show notes. You can find the Wikipedia article that talks about this, but I'm pretty sure they can't, unless there's something in the agreement.
That's probably what there is, though. That's the thing.
But even then,
I mean, I don't see how you can enforce that. How do you even do that?
Like, hey, I'm selling you this blender. You're not allowed to sell it to anyone else for at least 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, why? I don't think
that seems weird.
That's a thing. Like, no. They could probably do something where, like, okay, the subscription
can't transfer. Yeah, they could do that.
So you could sell it, but
right. But they won't be able to use it. That's not a good idea. So
yeah.
All right. Yeah. Next up, there's a new iMessage app for Android, and it actually works. And then the next article immediately after that is Apple cuts off Beeper Mini's access after launch of service that brought iMessage to Android. So for 3 days, Android could have the blue bubbles, and after 3 days, Apple shut it down. So
yeah, so it's actually even more complex than this. I've read a bunch of these articles.
Okay.
So this almost feels like the whole Sam Altman fired, rehired thing with OpenAI.
Oh, okay.
Like so much happened in the span of like 3 days.
Oh, I missed all that. Okay.
It was crazy. So here's the backstory. Beeper, which I've talked about before.
Yeah.
It's an interesting app. It's a combining all your different messaging in one.
Right.
They found a 16-year-old kid who had figured out a way to log into iMessages without an iPhone. They hired the kid, took on his project, integrated it, made this Beeper Mini thing.
Yeah.
Announced it.
Right.
And it was a week free, and then it was $2 a month to have iMessage whatever color bubbles on Android. I don't even know the colors, honestly.
Yep.
Blue, green, yellow, some kind of color.
Yeah.
And so a day and a half later, Apple cuts off access because they said this is a security issue because we don't know where your data is going and all that kind of stuff. Beeper came back and said, okay, well, we're going to do it not with a phone number, but now with a Apple ID.
Okay.
And they logged in that way, relaying it through some Mac or I don't know, somehow.
Yep.
That lasted another day or so, and then that has gotten blocked.
Oh, man.
So,
well, and I think like Beeper's perspective is like, listen, iMessage is encrypted. SMS is not encrypted. So Apple is forcing communication between Android and Apple devices to be unencrypted. And Apple's all about security. Like, so how does that make any sense? Which is a valid point, I think, from Beeper's perspective. I think Apple has this very closed ecosystem and they're trying to keep it very closed. And I think they could run into some problems. And we'll talk about this in a minute with some monopoly issues related to that too. Long-term.
So but they've said they're going to support RCS, which is then interoperable with Android and other phones. So
I don't know.
What's the problem here?
I don't know. Well, we'll figure it out down the road.
Next up, some Android phones can automatically send medical data during 911 calls. I had no idea this was a feature. I've actually not gone and looked into my phone for this stuff. But this kind of makes sense.
It does. I mean, if you're calling 911, why wouldn't the phone automatically deliver as much information to save your life as possible to that provider? Like, I mean, I think that makes sense.
It can send your name, age, blood type, emergency contact. And then any other kind of medical things that a first responder might want to know about you if something is happening. Allergies, like that is a big one.
That's a big one.
Honestly.
Yeah. Because you can't tell them you're allergic to penicillin if you're not, conscious. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm. All right. I'll share the next two articles here since they're intertwined. Google launches Gemini, the AI model. It hopes to take down ChatGPT. And the next article, Google's best Gemini AI demo video was fabricated.
By the way, you said linked.
Sorry.
Or what did you say? They're linked? And I said something else.
I don't know.
And Gemini is the twins.
Oh, so there you go. So, I mean, like, I watched this video and it was spectacular. I mean, there's a drawing. The AI is like, that's a duck. Oh, now it's this. Now it's a purple. I mean, like interacting like visually and audio, like just instantaneously.
Looks like real time.
And it looks like real time. And then some internet sleuths started looking at the video like, wait a second, that's not real time. And figured out like within a day that this was a cut together video to show what Gemini will be capable of. But I mean, like, listen, how many times do tech companies have to do that? Like Tesla had the fake truck driving down the long hill that didn't even have an engine in it and got called out for that. How many videos are you going to fake and the internet figures it out and loses trust in you? Like, just don't do it. Like, I don't understand, man.
So here's the funny thing. So I often tell entrepreneurs, like, when you're dealing with big companies, you need to be selling what you're going to have in like 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take them that long to actually do a deal with you.
True.
And so you're right. Do that. That does not apply when you're already a big company.
No. Or and when you're rolling out to consumers like that. No.
Right. Yeah. If you go like, we have this today and you don't, then that's not good. You can say, this is what we're going to have.
Yeah, this is what it's going to do. Like, you can say that all day long, but not this is what it does. Like, that's those are different things, you know?
Different marketing versus showing what you've got.
Yeah, I will say, like, I have a feeling that when Google does finally release Gemini, it will be just out of this world. And I've got a friend that's an iPhone user, and he's like, you know, I'll probably switch to Android when Google's AI finally gets released, because it'll be so much better than everything else out there. I'm like, that's a really interesting perspective, you know?
Well, it might not be Google, though. So there's another article I read. I did not tag it because it was a little in the weeds, but this is relevant since you bring up AI and phones. Microsoft has come up with a model that apparently is better than some of these 13 gig and 7 gig models that are out there.
Okay.
But it's small enough to fit on a phone and do processing in real time now.
Okay.
So you could ask it things and it'll answer.
Okay, no, but here's the problem, okay?
Uh-huh.
You started this example with a word that is the problem, and that word is Microsoft. So, listen, man, I'm working with a new client, and they're a Microsoft company, and I've got to use Microsoft's, and it is the most painful thing. Like, their core flagship products are still the most painful thing to use. Like Outlook, Teams, like, it's so pain. I'm telling you,
I had to use Teams yesterday. It was awful.
The worst. And I'm telling you, when the next generation of users are making business decisions, Microsoft is going out of business. I'm just telling you right now, that's what's going to happen. Like, they've been terrible user experience as long as they've been around. Like, that, it's always been the case, and it's never gotten better. And I don't, like, at some point, they're either, I don't see them improve. I think they're just going to go under at some point, for real. I really do.
This episode of Tech Talk, y'all, is sponsored by Microsoft.
I hope you don't get in trouble for saying that. So anyway,
it's not going to be ever.
No one will ever notice. Microsoft. So anyway, I think. I would not use it just because of that, what you just said. So, but that's just me. So, all right, you're up.
Next up is a epic win for Epic. A federal jury says Google's App Store violated antitrust law.
Okay, so I guess this is just Google's App Store, but like, wouldn't this also apply to like Apple's App Store too? Like, isn't it the same thing?
So the lawsuit was a little bit different, I think, with Google than it was with Apple, because Epic lost against Apple, but they've won against Google. But there might be ramifications further down the line around this.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It's, to me as a layperson, it seems pretty much,
I mean, they seem very similar to me. So, I don't know. So I guess.
Yeah. So, it remains. So Epic did not sue for damages,
money or
otherwise. So it remains to be seen. The judge is going to come up with the relief at some point.
Okay.
And we'll see what that is. It might be, you know, more access to different app stores, as well as different ways to pay, not being locked into Google's payment. What is it? Google Wallet,
right. Their structure. Google, right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Being able to kind of put other wallets or whatever with Google Play Store. I don't know how all this stuff works.
Right. I've
never built any of it.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah. Okay.
There you go. We'll see what happens.
All right. Next up, the lucky break behind the first CRISPR treatment. And man, you got to explain this one
tasty.
To me.
CRISPR.
I wasn't following. So what's this one about?
This is kind of awesome.
Okay.
So there is a gene editing therapy now for sickle cell. sickle cell
okay.
in people. So you know what sickle cell is, right? So the blood cells kind of flatten out. They kind of look like a sickle. They don't carry oxygen well or properly mm-hmm. because of the shape of the blood cells. They also have a tendency to clump because they're not a nice round shape that kind of flow through blood vessels properly.
Right, so right.
lots of issues for people that have sickle cell anemia.
Right.
So this, it's a intense therapy, but basically they are using a person's own bone marrow, doing gene editing in that.
Okay.
Then they nuke all of their bone marrow with chemotherapy because you got to kill it all because yeah. that stuff is still the bad ones.
Yeah.
And then they replace it. Okay. And it's incredible. They've done this on a few people. It works. And so, yeah, this is the first ever gene editing therapy that's been approved by the FDA.
Wow.
There's a couple of other therapies that are on the horizon as well, also for sickle cell.
Mm. Love it.
So okay. hopefully the folks that are suffering with this will soon have a solution
yeah.
to their problems and much easier lives that they don't have to worry about this causing them problems.
Yeah, so, that's great.
I think this is the first of many. I think CRISPR, and I'm sure like if we come back to this and talk about this in 10 years, the sickle cell anemia therapies then will be so much better than even this oh,
yeah.
first one.
Yeah,
it's moving as fast. Well as other therapies for genetic issues as well.
Yeah.
So. Good job, scientists that do gene editing stuff. I don't know who you are.
All right, you're up.
Quick as a fox, Firefox keeps getting faster.
Yes.
Good job, engineers that keep making things faster.
Some of these numbers were pretty impressive in this yeah. article. I mean, about like 50% faster on speedometer 2.1, 15% faster in the last year. I mean,
all I want to know is, can I keep more tabs open simultaneously than the 100 or so that I've got right now?
Dude, your tab game just stresses me out, man. It's just wrong, man. It's just wrong on so many levels. So,
I should share my screen
no,
with you more often.
Don't do that. No, that's a bad idea.
You know, when you open up the little thing on the side that shows you all the tabs and there's a scroll bar that's super tiny, that means you have a lot.
That's not good, man. It's not good. All right.
It's fine.
Speaking of not good, Spotify to lay off 17% of its workforce in latest round of job cuts.
It's funny how they did this right after Spotify and Wrapped released. They're like, okay, now we're done.
Yeah. And it's kind of unfortunate to do at the end of the year too, but I mean, there's no good time really, I guess, to lay somebody off. So you just gotta,
I mean, yeah, I guess we could say that any time of the year. It's pretty bad to lay people off in the middle of the year.
Yeah, it's the worst when you get laid off summer. Around Easter. I mean, God, like whatever.
Or the beginning of the year. That just starts your year off bad. Or
Valentine's Day. That's the worst.
It's bad when you get laid off on a day.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Just any day, mm-hmm. all the days. Yeah. What else is bad, or at least they're being accused of it being bad? UK accuses Meta of empowering child sexual abusers with encryption rollout. Now, here's the problem. This is like the go-to
we've talked about
argument
this several times.
Every single
it's a garbage
time.
Argument.
Like, okay, envelopes
yeah.
empower child sexual abusers.
Right. So do cars because they can travel.
Oh,
let's
not do those either.
Yeah. Telephones, because they can call. Yeah. I mean,
food, you're feeding them. So stop all
yeah,
the
it's
food.
Just, it's a dumb argument. It really is.
I mean,
it's like we need to be able to look into all private communications for everybody on the 1% chance or the 0.5 or whatever. You
know. We're fans of privacy, just not yours.
Yeah, it just doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't, it's yeah. a bad argument. So
it is a bad argument.
All right. We already talked about the Epic win. So we'll skip that. I don't know how that ended up in there twice. All right. Pre-check members can soon breeze through TSA security lines at self-service screening in Las Vegas. All right. So listen, I read this article. I still don't really understand what self-service screening is. Like, how do
you... So, you know, when you go to the grocery store and you have to check out yourself
yeah.
your own stuff, it's that.
But
so basically, they're trusting you to scan you.
So is this like the scan your passport, scan your ticket section? That's what the self-service screening is? Or is this the...
I think, I've never experienced it yet. They're just starting to roll this out.
Yeah.
I have a feeling... I don't know if you've been to the airport lately, but now in some of the lines, the TSA pre-check lines, you don't even have to take out your ID.
Oh, yeah.
Or your ticket or anything.
Oh, yeah.
It just takes your picture
right.
and it compares to the picture.
True.
And like, same person, ready to go.
Right.
I have a feeling This is that.
Okay.
Without the TSA person sitting behind it.
Okay. That's probably true. All right. That makes.
So what that means is they can do more of these stations.
Right.
And get those lines to become smaller.
Right.
Because look, if you're doing TSA pre-check, you've already given over your fingerprints, yeah, your photos, yeah, all of that stuff. Yeah. I know I always espouse being the pro-privacy person, yeah, here, but I've done it.
But for TSA pre-man, it's worth it. Take my picture. I'm ready. Here we go.
Because, I mean, look, the government already has all that stuff.
That's true.
Quite honestly. Yeah. I've got a passport. Yeah. I've got a driver's license.
Yeah.
You know, I've...
You're putting your face on the internet right this second. So,
exactly.
I'm just saying.
So, for me, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah. I got you.
That data's probably already been breached somewhere already. So, you know, what's one more time?
Time for the Weird and Wacky segment.
Abominable Snowman.
He's not an axe murderer.
One of the TAs turned out to be a bot. First up in Weird and Wacky, lost in space no more. Missing tomato found in space station after 8 months. How do you lose a tomato? It's a small tomato.
It's like a cherry.
It's a tiny tomato.
So two favorite parts from this article. One is they blamed one specific astronaut saying he ate it. Like,
why would they blame that
like
guy?
All kinds of wrong right there.
Hey, look, we're going to spend millions of dollars training you and sending you up into space, but
Mark,
I think you ate
did you eat that tomato? Mark, come on. Did you eat that? You did, didn't you?
It was
you
Frank. Frank Rubio.
Frank. And then I said Mark because I just watched Frank The Martian. Did. So when I think astronaut, I think of Mark from The Martian. So then the other thing that was funny is he said in the article that he had Velcroed the tomato in place but then it was gone when he went back or something. Like,
disappeared.
Wait, what? How do you Velcro a tomato?
What kind
place?
Of tomato is this?
I don't understand.
That's got Velcro on it.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny too.
That's a weird space tomato.
Velcroed it in place. And they didn't say where they found it, which I really disappointed. I really wanted to be like, and they found it stuck behind the instrument panel. Somehow it got screwed back there. Like, I wanted like something, you know, but like, no.
Screwed back there.
Well, like got put in there and then the instrument panel got screwed shut, you know, and like back in the instrument panel floating around, you know, jiggling the wires. No, they didn't tell us.
I think, you know, we've always talked about doing a line of merch for Tech Talk Y'all. Yeah. I think we should have a shirt that says, I like to eat space tomatoes, and it's a tomato with some Velcro on it. I think we should make that.
I like it.
I think we might have to make that.
All right. Speaking of what I would not like if I was this individual, but I would never be. Here's what intentionally crashing a plane for YouTube clicks gets you. The answer is 6 months in prison. That's what it gets you. 6 months in prison. We reported on this a while back, talked about it. And, you know, the guy would just happened to go up in a plane and he happened to be videoing the whole thing. And he also happened to be wearing a parachute when he took off, which is kind of unusual when you're flying a plane.
I mean, and, I always get onto planes wearing a parachute. They give me weird looks on Delta flights, but you know,
I bet they do.
They're like, okay.
And now I get 6 months in prison for the stunt. So I'm gonna go with that's not worth it. I think that's the thing. It's not, and also like okay, so the other question
I'm gonna go with, he should have probably gotten longer.
Well,
honestly.
He should have gotten longer, but then also like imagine the expense of all of this, right? Like he had a plane that he intentionally crashed. Like, dude already has money. Like, what are you like? You got some kind of money if you can do that. Like, what are you trying to do? Like, just use your money in other ways, man. Like, you own a plane. I don't own a plane. Do you own a plane? You don't own a plane?
I don't own a plane.
I mean,
plane,
just, no. You know, don't crash the plane that you own. That's all I'm trying to say. So,
yeah. And a very intentionally, like, if you read the article, they talk about how intentionally this was done. They knew where the wreckage was.
Yeah.
They went there.
Yeah.
And disposed of parts of it in trash bins around Lompoc Airport.
Yeah, that's the other part. It's like,
you know you did wrong.
Dude took a helicopter to where the plane crash was to collect the debris to think. So like, okay, so dude owns a plane. He also has money for a helicopter, apparently.
A helicopter,
that he's renting.
Yeah.
I'm not renting helicopters. I'm just saying, like, you know, like there's like so many problems here. Like just.
I've only flown in a helicopter once when I was a kid and they were given flights for a penny a pound.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
So you get on the scale and whatever you weigh, that's how much you pay.
Dang, I could do that. Yeah. I mean, not even that many pennies now. Like, come on.
And maybe this next check was exactly for that. Ooh. Steve Jobs signed Apple Computer Company check to Radio Shack, although Radio Shack doesn't do helicopter rides.
Right.
But it's a $4.01 check.
Yeah. Yeah.
Handwritten.
Yeah.
July 23rd, 1976. It sold. So the auction's already done by the time you hear this.
Yeah.
It sold for $46,063.
Fascinating.
and they banked at Wells Fargo back then.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, it had the original Apple address on it. And the check, yep. The check's like ancient looking. This is like this super old school looking, you know, like super fancy kind of check, you know, when checks are trying to be all uppity and stuff, I guess. So,
yeah, I really want to know, like, was this cashed or like, how did this survive all? Because they don't show the back of the check.
That's a great question. Like how, like, why would it ever come out? Like, that's an interesting question. Right. Why would anybody hold on to a check from 76? Like, why would they hold on to it for 5 years, much less for, you know, however many years? Like,
because when you got it, you were probably like, well, the $4, I'd rather have it right then.
Yeah.
No, yeah. No, instead, like, let me hold on to this
right.
for 50 ever. Years and yeah. then I'll get 46,000. I mean, I'm sure somebody else had it before this
yeah.
and it was sold. You know, I wonder what the provenance is, like who was the first
that's what I'd like
buyer from whatever radio, but maybe this was an asset that Radio Shack had and they were like, let's get $15 out of this check that we have. People seem to know this guy.
Tech wreck, time to get your tech wreck.
Tech wreck. Chicky.
Tech wreck.
Time to get your tech wreck. Okay, Adam, it is tech wreck time. What do you have for us this week?
Okay, so I have a weird one that's so amazing. Okay.
You always have a weird
one. So this is called the Buy More Fabric Shaver. Okay. And so, all right. So,
okay.
You know, like when you have like a sweater or like sometimes like a sweatshirt, mm-hmm. it gets those like little like rolled up balls on it and they kind of look bad.
Lint. Right?
Well, like, no, not just lint, but like they're like even more
fuzz
than
balls.
Lint. Yeah, like
fuzz balls.
Yeah, and so like for example, I had this really nice, I mean, pretty like very expensive vest that I got for a gift. It was a North Face vest, and it's wool and super warm. But like I would never wear it to meetings because it had all these little ugly looking balls on it that you can't even pick them off. So this shaver, it's literally uh-huh. like a person's shaver that you would use on your face. It's got like a foil yeah. and thing, and you just run it over the sweater with like all the lint balls. It just shaves them right off and it looks brand new. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever. So I love it. It's amazing. So I my daughter bought it for her, but I'm totally stealing it. So yeah, so it's amazing.
So I've used these before and not this specific one, but other ones.
Right.
And the risk I run is actually cutting the fabric because it goes at a weird angle. So I'm assuming the technology has improved and you don't have that.
I mean,
risk
I went all over my vest. I mean, while I was wearing it, just all over. And it was like, no problem at all. Like it was no,
while
yeah,
you were
no, yeah, no big deal. Yeah. It worked perfect.
I this might be a buy for me because, I even felt, on our bed sheets the other day.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Those little,
oh yeah.
Because you know, you sleep in the same spot
yeah.
and it's just going to keep rubbing and you get those little.
Yeah.
Fuzz balls.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Which are not
so fun. Yeah, so it's a great little like it's cheap, it's easy, works great. So
there you go.
Go for it. Yeah. All right. What's your tech rec?
I'm back on the home automation kick. I found yet another product that I want to use and I've started using around the house. So it's the Eve Motion. So if you remember, I did the Eve water detector things. This okay. is the same company's Motion mm-hmm. Sensor. So it's a smart motion and light sensor. Mm. So these little devices, they work on Matter as well.
Right.
So that's the new protocol of home automation stuff.
Right.
I got my first one. So this is a 3-pack that I bought. I got my first one working and I've actually put it in my stairwell from the first floor down into the basement. So previously I had 2 light switches for that at the bottom of the stairway. And at the top, the problem is you can't put motion sensors on both sides because right. they don't work like that.
Yep.
So one had a motion sensor, the bottom didn't.
Right.
So when you're walking up the stairs, you had to do it manually.
Right.
When you're walking down, it would come on automatically.
Manually like also, a sucker. Don't
like
forget
a
that.
Sucker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The problem with the going down is sometimes the door would be left open. And even if you're just walking by the door, the lights would turn on.
Yeah.
So I was not liking any of this.
Right.
So I've put in a little motion sensor in the middle of this stairwell because it turns.
Sure.
So it has visibility to the downstairs and to the upstairs. And now I have it turn on whenever it sees motion, as well as the fact that it actually knows how much light is in that stairwell.
Oh,
and so okay. if it's still bright, it's like, no, you're good.
You're good.
You don't need to turn on the lights. You can see.
You're all set.
All fine.
No big deal. Okay.
So there you go.
That's really cool.
Works really well. It was easy to get on with my home assistant. And I've got 2 more that I'm going to be using. Okay. One of them is probably going to even go outside because this one is resistant to the weather. So there you go.
So speaking of home automation, I'll just an update. So I got more of those Govee smart outlets and uh-huh. I did realize that they do not interface with Apple HomeKit. So I'm going to end up having to buy like a home bridge and set that up on Raspberry Pi to be able to integrate, which is fine. I don't think it'll be too much of a problem. But I will say, I mean, it's like $23 for a pack of four, man. That's real hard to beat. I mean, it's there and they work great. Yeah. I've got them on like timers. All the holiday lights come on all at the same time every day. They all go off at the same time. Like it's fantastic. So it's working
now. And I think I've recommended this before too. The Home Assistant, if you go that route, especially the Home Assistant Yellow, it bridges across all the different types of things. So it'll do HomeKit. Yeah. It'll do Zigbee and Z-Wave if you have the right USB adapter in there. It'll do Matter. It'll do all of the things.
All right, I might.
I will tell you, though, the interface is not the most user-friendly.
Is it easy to install, though? Like, I mean, the interface being bad, that's fine. I can handle that. But how easy is the installation of the whole thing?
So if you buy the Home Assistant Yellow directly from the company that makes it, you don't have to install anything. It comes pre-installed.
Okay.
You just boot that bad boy up. You got to put some storage in there.
Okay.
Plug it in your network and you are good to go. That's what I did.
Okay. Interesting. So then you have to add your own storage to it then as well.
You do. Well, okay. So you got to add two things. You got to add a Raspberry Pi, a specific type.
Okay.
That's this little plug-in module.
Yeah.
And either that one already has storage built into it or you use a card thingy that you slide in there. So
okay.
Depends on how you want to go about it.
We're going to keep talking offline here in just a minute. So I'll keep the page up. All right, Sanjay, how can our listeners find and connect with you?
They can find me at sanjayparekh.com or hacking on my Home Assistant and automating my house. What about you, Adam?
You can find me on my website, adamjwalker.com. It's got all the things. Check it out. Dun, dun, dun.